I pride myself on, being available. So I think my immediate reaction was sadness that I don't know what the extent of what just happened was, and I know that I'm leaving a game, and I know we've already been shorthanded with injuries, and it was frustrating. My initial reaction was to, get up and go to first base. And as I was on the ground, I was bleeding a lot, and I knew that this wasn't normal, that this was more than just, getting hit in the face, that there's a lot of blood and that there's no way to get to first base. And, came back in the clubhouse and, kind of had a moment to, kind of assess what happened. Saw the doctor, and without any x-rays or anything, he told me that your nose is deformed and it's more than likely broken. And I had to take a moment to myself to just collect myself. I was sad. It wasn't so much about the pain, it was just about the fact that this team's gone through a lot. And like I said, I pride myself on being available, and I don't always enjoy the results of going out there every single day, but I do enjoy the challenge of being available every day, and I enjoy playing. And that's the thing that hurts the most. My face will heal, but my heart's broken right now because this team's hurting right now. And I came here and didn't really know what my role was going to be, and I was gifted an opportunity to go out there and play every day, and I don't take that lightly, and it hurts.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, May the 23rd, 2021. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Well, throughout the offseason, when you get the transaction log, we talk about the big moves, going after Trevor Bauer and James McCann versus JT Realmuto, and how the Mets could go out and get more bullpen, and you get transactions like Trevor May, and all the kind of debate about what arms they could get, and when they signed Taijuan Walker, about how that impacts the rotation. But very rarely do we care when the Mets go out and you'll see like small transactions, and usually they're at the bottom of an article, hidden away, or sometimes not even at all talked about. Someone like me who has the ability to get MLB press box transactions, I'll get an update. But when they sign a Jose Peraza or a Wilfredo Tovar or Brandon Drury to a minor league contract and basically an invite to spring training, a Jonisui Fargis, guys like that, you never really think that it'll get to the point where you're going to talk very much about these guys unless they have a big minor league season and they work their way into the mix, or a big spring training, or something tragic happens, really crazy. And we've talked many times about Thunderbolts on this program, and Thunderbolts come in many forms. They come as large Thunderbolts, season-changing, and then you have periods where you get a lot of them. And who would have thought that 7 of the 9 players in the opening day lineup and about 16, and if Yamamoto comes back dirty with any kind of issue with his shoulder, maybe 17 Mets on the disabled list, those are pretty fast and furious Thunderbolts that come out of team. And you heard Kevin Pillar in the intro, and I know that it's quite a few days later and that story's gone stale, but I really thought Kevin Pillar and what happened there and his reaction and how he got up and how he came out and was in the dugout despite how he looked and handing out the lineup card, and now It seems like he's already gotten surgery for his broken nose. And, you know, maybe you'll see him back in, oh, let's say 2 to 3 weeks. I thought it was pretty symbolic of where this team is at right now. Because when you get hit with thunderbolts as a team, you could go a couple of different ways. Adversity is always going to be part of a season. It just is. And very few teams, even the 86 Mets, went through adversity. I mean, not just in the postseason with trying to beat a very difficult Houston team and the Red Sox and what happened in that series, but they lost Mookie Wilson earlier in the year. Gary Carter went down. You didn't know how a guy like, you know, Ray Knight would play out and things like that. I mean, that team didn't go through a ton of adversity, but every team has some sort of adversity. Every team goes through, even the 2006 Mets, who pretty much were in first place from day one on, lost, you know, starting pitching and, you know, had issues and injuries to, you know, I think even Carlos Beltran won on the disabled list. So it happens. But this particular Mets group has really been handed adversity in a lot of small ways and then really just pounded away at them over the last week, especially after they were swept in Tampa just a week ago. You could feel sorry for them and they could feel sorry for themselves and they could sit around and wait for McNeil to come back and Conforto to come back and J.D. Davis to come back and Alonso to come back. You know, they can make excuses and say, look, we can't compete because we have a 4A lineup. That is true. They have a 4A lineup. But that's like basically the baseball version of junk food. It's going to make you feel good for a little bit, but no real healthy outcome will come. Nobody else is going to feel sorry for them. The Braves don't care. The Phillies don't care. Miami doesn't care. You know, the team across town has had their issues with Giancarlo Stanton being out. They're not going to care. So all you can do is accept it, learn from it, and really try to push through. In a lot of ways, if you do that, as a team, you'll become even better. And you'll actually look back at this period where the makeshift Mets, the replace-a Mets, whatever you want to call them, really was somewhat of a turning point from what we all have talked about was the early season adjustments and doldrums, sleepiness that we saw that concerned us quite a bit. We're trying to learn what this team is. We talked about getting to know the Mets and getting into Memorial Day and figuring out who the Mets are. And maybe with Memorial Day just a week away and with all these injuries still up in the air, maybe we need to expand that a little bit into early June. But I do know that Dom Smith in the post game after the loss on Saturday said it best because it tells me they're looking at this the same way, that when he goes and talks about how all these tight games help them prepare for the postseason, shows what they're made of, how to block out the crowd, how to control their emotions, it tells me they're at least, as a group, embracing the challenge and trying to make the best of this because a 3-6 road trip is well below expectations. I mean, I was really hoping they could pull out one of the last 2 years in Miami, come home 4-5. That would have been outstanding. After getting swept in Tampa, losing McNeil, losing Conforto, losing Alonso, losing Taijuan Walker. I mean, you lost, within a 48-hour sequence, you lost key players. And being able to go in Atlanta, being able to take two there. I mean, once they got swept in Tampa, and you heard what was going on with McNeil and Conforto, I mean, this had 0-9 written all over it. And some teams would. I mean, they had really no business winning maybe even three of these games. But you could also flip the script and say they lost three walk-offs and they could have easily won three more and could have been 6-4. So the Mets are trying to do what the only thing you can do is stay tough, try to do a lot of the little things. Going into Friday's game, they have 51 games in 52 days thereabouts. A lot of doubleheaders on the schedule. There will be days off, but not as many as they've had. They really have been blessed, I think, early in this season in one way, where the schedule was kind that you know, guys like Syndergaard and Carrasco, a lot of the games, we'll see about Carrasco, it seems like almost like Syndergaard's ahead of him, come after their anticipated return because of the COVID shutdown, the rainouts, things like that. But, you know, now it's going to get serious. You know, you could be buried. I mean, they could easily, you know, not that they'd be buried this week, but they could easily have been in a tailspin one which there'd be no, you know, no answer for. But the real thing will be, you know, this is crazy. And you could laugh and say, look at this, or feel sorry for yourself. And as a fan, say, this is unfair. But this can be a real jumpstart for this team, taking these Thunderbolts and real championship teams, teams that are serious about winning, will take these kind of challenges and they'll make them into something that they that springboards them to something greater. And we may not see that today, and we may not see that tomorrow. We certainly didn't see it today, but you'll see it and it'll be referenced at some point. What are some of the little things that could come out of trying to win this way? A team that essentially we thought would score 5+ runs a game pretty easily coming out of spring training, but a team right now as constituted, if you could get 3 to 4 runs out of this group, that's all you're going to get. They really can't come back from a crooked number inning like what happened with Miami in the second inning where Yamamoto basically melted down. And he didn't get tattooed. A walk, get hit, bleeder, a line drive that just gets out of the way. And look at it, you know, you look up and it's 5-0. A team like the way it's constituted now can't come back from that kind of deficit. But what you're learning a little bit about this team is that, one, Luis Rojas and the front office, because it's a combination, and Jeremy Hefner, the coaching staff and the analytics department, it's truly, I believe, a collective effort, are trying to put pitchers in a position where they have the best chance of success. And I know that the opener is something that I have not been a big proponent of. And I certainly think the opener over the course of 162 games, if that is a week in and week out, day in and day out strategy, is going to burn the bejesus out of a bullpen. This bullpen has been good. This bullpen has been as good as you could have asked. You cannot ask for more. Nobody's really disappointed unless you want to throw Dylan Betances into that mix. And quite honestly, with the kind of injury that he has, I never really expected much. I mean, you've gotten way more than you could have thought out of Familia at this point. Castro has been a revelation, been very solid. May and Loop have proved to be solid additions based on what you paid for them. Edwin Diaz has been the good Edwin Diaz. And look, you've had surprises out of Gazelman and Sean Reed Foley. And I know Jacob Barnes' numbers are not great, but he's been kind of skewed into a couple of bad outings. Even Drew Smith, who gave up the game-winning home run yesterday, has contributed. And there might be some more young arms on the way. Who knows? You know, you're seeing some names of starters down the minor leagues. Who knows what is next with this group? And you haven't even gotten Seth Lugo back, which looks like you will get Seth Lugo back pretty soon, maybe as soon as Memorial Day, maybe sooner. He's on his rehab assignment. So you could not have asked for more. But part of that is they're being used, I think, appropriately. Don't think they're being abused, but they certainly can get to that point. But what the Mets are doing with the opener is saying, hey, Joey Lucchese, this is where, at the point, you might become less effective. Hey, Jordan Yamamoto, this is where I have you at. David Peterson, Rojas has been, and he pushed them that one outing in Tampa, but also in the outings where he didn't have it in Atlanta and, you know, against the Diamondbacks, he's pulled them quickly in order to say, hey, you know, we got to stop the bleeding now. So it's really been a situation where everybody seems to know their role. They're managing the bullpen in a way where they're going with more leverage situations than necessary roles. If you look throughout the series in Atlanta when they had more of a bullpen-type game, they're making sure guys like Loop and like May, doesn't matter the inning, they're going after the important parts of the order where your toughest hitters are at, which is a modern way of looking at this. So you can't really ask for much more than that. I've been very critical of the shift, saying, oh, it looks like the Mets never are in the right position. And I don't know who said this, but I certainly want to give them credit, but I can't remember. I saw it floating around the internet, Twitter, whatever, is that when the shift doesn't work, you seem to remember that bleeder that rolled through the right side of the infield for a hit, like yesterday in Miami. But all the other times it does, when there's a ground ball up the middle, like on Friday night when Lindor was able to turn the double play in extra innings to bail out Aaron Loop, you kind of take that one for granted. And he's probably right, because if you look at the defensive metrics, Mets are top 5 in baseball in run prevention. I mean, think about that. There's, other than Lindor, and he's a big part of it. I mean, the shortstop position is a big part of that number, so let's not forget that. But other than third base, which has J.D. Davis numbers in it, the Mets have been a net positive on defense. And I think a lot of that has to do with positioning. And the metrics based on what I just told you, Mets are one of the top teams in the league in saving runs because of the shift. So it's working. Whatever they're doing out there, and I think I saw Jonishui Fargis with some kind of colorful card out in the outfield this afternoon. Looks like they have a pretty, you know, complicated, or by today's standards, for a big market team with analytics as part of its repertoire, you know, a normal component to the game preparation, to the in-game preparation, to the in-game execution. So you're starting to see that the Mets have been able to do some of the little things, know how to put pitchers in a position to be successful, which makes them better than maybe they are, know how to put fielders in positions where they could be successful. We heard in the offseason, hey, don't worry about Brandon Nimmo, because if we could, you know, with positioning, we can make him look better than he is. Now, he's been out, but maybe that's part of some of the success you see with the Mets being one of the top run prevention teams out there. Nobody talks about that. I think they're starting to. So from this, the Mets are going to have to win. And best case scenario is you hope that McNeil and Alonso could come back sooner rather than later. I think those injuries are less severe. Conforto concerns me. Nimmo's still kind of like out there in the ethers. I know that J.D. Davis had a little setback down in Syracuse with up in Syracuse. It's really up, even though it's the minor leagues, with the stiff neck. Hopefully that's nothing too significant. And the biggest reason why, despite all the negatives that are going on, is that you have the pitching coming back. You have Lugo coming back. You can see Syndergaard. I know that Carrasco is a little bit peculiar because it looked like they were ramping him up and then they backed off. But he's not too far away, I have to imagine. I got some emails this past week and about the Mets handling injuries. Are they conservative with the injuries? Look, I don't know what to say. I think it's definitely peculiar how conservative they've been with guys like DeGrom and Walker. By the way, DeGrom coming back next week. But I think with the Mets, and I think what Pete Alonso said best about the injuries, is that to win the war, you got to sometimes take a step back and maybe lose a battle. And I think right now they're willing to put their money down that they can navigate a stretch against Miami, Colorado, and then Atlanta coming home. And Atlanta, I mean, looks to have woken up against the Pirate pitching. I mean, there's a team that, you know, the Mets maybe caught them a little bit at the right time in Atlanta with some of their big hitters still slumping. They were betting on that they were able to navigate that stretch till Memorial Day when they go on the road and they start to go to Arizona and they go on a West Coast portion of the trip, which might get much harder. So hopefully they'll get healthier by then, and then hopefully by the mid to late June they'll be very healthy. And then you'll look back and say, well, it was worth it because they were able to not let injuries linger that were small things, especially when you deal with pitching. A little tightness in the side leads to a change in your mechanics. Those mechanics lead to shoulder and elbow issues, and all of a sudden you have a big problem, and away you go. So the real thing I think you take away is that the Mets, are they tough enough to withstand this? So far they've shown some toughness. Kevin Pillar is the poster child of that. And it's not going to be easy to get through this. Certainly not going to be easy. But the old saying is, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I 100% believe that the New York Mets fall into that right now. Because what doesn't kill this team and knock them out completely in the 2021 baseball season will make them stronger. And I think at some point throughout the summer, into the meat and potatoes of let's get it done. We're still getting to know this team. We're learning. We learned a lot about this team this week. Let's see how they could carry over some of this toughness into the homestand against Colorado, against Atlanta. But as we wind down the getting to know phase of this team and get into what does this team need, and maybe it's a bat. And don't be surprised now. I heard Zach Scott on SiriusXM MLB Network Radio talk to Jim Duquette and say they already have been out there with trades in the hopper looking to acquire maybe somebody. I think the best acquisitions are the ones that are on the injured list that are probably going to be here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But who knows what they have up their sleeve, and maybe it's a bat. And I think the most logical upgrade for this team, assuming everybody comes back within a reasonable amount of time, would be an upgrade at third base. I know everybody's talked about Chris Bryan, who's a free agent at the end of the year. That's not going to be cheap. But anyway, that's where we're at. Hey, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, fun segment. I think you're really going to like this. We talked about bringing on fan and fan perspective to kind of continue the conversation. Well, here's a fan that we're bringing on, Liam Oliver, from the United Kingdom, who is a Mets fan since 2019, actually June of 2019. He joined me right before the Mets took on the Marlins earlier today. Remember, the UK is about 6+ hours ahead. And I think it was interesting because Liam talked about how he became a Mets fan, the process there, finding the Talking Mets podcast, and also how baseball is consumed across the pond when your game is obviously being played maybe when you're asleep, but also how Major League Baseball, maybe how they're not marketing to different areas, especially an area that's baseball's, it would be very difficult to get baseball into the conversation. It's almost like harder than getting soccer into the conversation here in the United States. But I think there's a lot of interesting takeaways about baseball, marketing, becoming a Mets fan, rooting for the team across in the United Kingdom and Scotland. And I think it'd be something interesting to get that perspective. And you'll hear that and more after we take a break right after this. Mets fans love Bartolo Colon and remember his home run. But what kind of impact did he really have on the club? Michael Stahl, author of the book Big Sexy, Bartolo Colon in his own words, joined us on the podcast and gave us a pretty good idea.
I got to speak to Terry Collins over the phone, and he contributed a story. And he says the definition of a professional, he's like Bartolo is right there. One of his early starts in Anaheim, where Bartolo just didn't have it, and he gave up like back-to-back-to-back home runs, I think, in like the first inning. And you know what he did? He took his licks, and he stayed in the game until the fifth inning because the bullpen was tired. So, you know, his ERA ballooned up to like 6 or something like that. But, you know, he didn't care. He knew it was best for the team, and he wanted to stay in the game. He told Terry after the first inning, he goes, I'm going to get you into the 7th. And he wound up going 5, but still, like, that was his attitude, and that was, you know, real testament to him.
Listen to this and more at www.talkingmetspodcast.com. We're back, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program for the first time somebody from across the pond in the United Kingdom, Scotland. You know, he's been a great listener of the program. We've been corresponding, I think, for at least 6 months, probably since the holidays, maybe a little bit sooner. Liam Oliver joining us. And as I said, we're going to try to do these fan segments. And Liam, welcome to the show. So to give the listeners an idea, you're in your early 20s, you're over in Scotland in the United Kingdom, and you are a Mets fan. How does that happen in the world of soccer? You know, Chelsea was on my TV this morning. I see a big Chelsea game this morning on my TV. Not necessarily with cricket out there, I guess. I mean, baseball, Mets, what's going on there?
So the audience won't like it, and I'm hesitant to even tell you this, but I originally started looking into getting tickets for a Yankees game. So my 21st, roughly 21st, is a big birthday in America. Mm-hmm. So I was going to New York with my best friend. I was working, and I end up looking up baseball tickets as something to do, you know, over June peak sort of summer. Turns out baseball goes on for 162 games, a lot of time in the summer. So I'm looking at Yankees tickets, and they're out of town. I can't remember who they were playing, but whoever they were playing, summer of 2019. Probably the Rays. And then I turned to the guy next to me and I go, oh, I can't get any tickets. Now, very coincidentally, the guy next to me is named John Stevens, and he's a massive Giants fan. So he has like a replica 2014 World Series ring and stuff along those lines. And he goes, oh, New York has 2 teams. And I went, what? Because obviously coming from Scotland, you see a load of Yankees hats across the UK. You know, people just take it as being a symbol of New York. Just like you see loads of Dodgers hats because people just think it's an LA hat.
Sure.
So, yeah. So he goes, oh, there's 2 teams. The other team's called the Mets. So I go, I look it up. I managed to get 2 tickets for, I think, June the 14th. So it was against the Cardinals. So I booked that. I booked 2 tickets. And since then, I'm like, well, I better follow the team so I understand what's going on. I look at podcasts. I just type in Mets into the podcasts. And I'm pretty sure the first one that came up was the Talking Mets podcast, hosted obviously by yourself. Yeah. So I look into that. I listened to your first episode, which was the DeGrom extension episode, was the first episode I listened to.
Wow. This is going back probably the Grom extension. You're going back a couple of years, right? Mm. I mean, so you're going, so you were the fan of there. And if I look, that's a Friday night, June 14th, Mets lose 9-5. And if I remember correctly, Familia got hit hard in the eighth inning, gave up a couple of home runs, bad loss. And then the Mets wound up winning the next night when Jeff McNeil threw someone up at the, out at the plate.
I wasn't that at game. That one.
You weren't at that
no,
one.
No, what was the one that was rained out? There was a rain out.
Well, that's actually the night. So this is interesting because now I'm remembering. The night before the first game, the Mets had the lead in the ninth and they let the ninth play out, and then it got rained out. They started the night, and then in the middle of it, Diaz gave up the tying run or whatever it may have been. And everybody kept saying, "Why didn't?" I think Pete Alonso had encouraged the umpires to actually play on, and the fans were mad at Pete, saying, "Why did you do that?" So that game you went to, I don't think you were allowed in for the first game because they finished the game the next night on Friday. No. You were.
So we did a tour. So me and my friend James, we did a tour of City Field. With a lovely tour guide. His name is Court, I believe. He was a lovely guy. So we went on the tour. I actually have a bullpen ball from Familia. It was throwing just in the bullpen, and the must have been the bullpen catcher tossed over a couple of balls to see sort of groups on the tour. So it's through in the living room. Yeah, I've got a practice ball. Familia's huge, by the way. I'm 5'10", and he's obviously, it was before he'd lost weight.
Big guy.
Big man. So we got to watch, by the time the tour was done, it was the Cardinals finishing up their practice, the last two outs or so, that were all ground out straight to first, basically.
Right.
Which prompted my friend to turn to me and go, "Are the Mets a bit rubbish?" And I was like, "No, I don't think so." And then it was the second game on that day, and there was one home run hit, which I missed because I went to get to the toilet. And obviously, you know, going on the tour, you're told about the Apple. There's the Apple out front, City Field, which is from Shea, I believe.
Yes, correct.
So then obviously the new Apple gets raised, got raised plenty of times that season with Pete Alonso's record. But I went to the toilet. I came back and my friend's like, "They raised the Apple, but you missed it." And I don't know for the life of me who hit that home run.
Oh, that's funny. So Liam Oliver, he's out in the UK, Scotland, talking about his experience. So here, you're a guy that comes into the Mets family in 2019 in June. You were going to get a Yankees tickets as you visit the United States. You go to this Mets game. So I've always wondered, because a lot of people that listen become fans when they're very young, usually from their parents. Now, you're living in a different country, different culture. Soccer, I'm assuming, is the big thing over there.
Yeah.
You're following the team. I think right now I'm talking to you right before the Mets take on the Marlins at 1 o'clock here on a Sunday. Yeah. I'm guessing it's 6 or 7 hours ahead. Am I correct there?
10 past 5 currently.
Ten past five. So you're in the afternoon. So you're getting games the next morning. You're always kind of delayed and whatnot. Did you say after that game, "I'm going to stick with the Mets," or was it cool just to see a baseball game? Like, now you're a Mets fan, it seems like, listening to Talking Mets. And you're how is it to kind of – I've always wondered how you root for a team that's so – it's one thing to be on the West Coast, which is behind. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Another thing to be ahead. So I'm curious how that works.
So it was interesting because, you know, on the tour you get is that fine?
Yep.
Sorry. Sure. Yep. On the tour, you get a photo opportunity. And with the photo opportunity, you get to take it. So we went up to the boxes. So I was suggested by John to buy a jersey. Now, a big thing in the UK that I notice isn't big in America is getting personalized jerseys. So, for example, I have a Mets jersey with Oliver on the back and 21 is the number. Now, I don't play in 21. I play in 72. But I got it for my 21st. I didn't know Todd Fraser at the time played in 21. I was like, "Oh, there's already a Met that plays in it." So I go with that jersey. And it was weird because, like you say, soccer, or we say football here, the rivalries between that are very, very heated. So, for example, I ended up going to another game on my birthday. I have the physical tickets for it. It was this June 16th game. And I go to... we get the 7 train to Queens, you know, down to City Field. And it was a bizarre experience for me coming from where football is such a heated thing. So it was seeing Cardinals fans on the train with Mets fans was such a weird experience for me. Like, we were sitting next to Cardinals fans but you wouldn't get that in the UK. Like, football stadiums are separated. You get a visitor seating and home seating.
Right.
And you would not catch an opposing fan wearing the jersey of an opposing team dead on, like, you know, the train to Glasgow to go to Ibrox.
Wow. But look at that.
Mm-hmm, it's such crazy. A family experience. Like you say, most Americans learn it from their parents.
Like, right.
You yourself, from the conversations I've heard on the podcast, I've spoke to people that have been fans of the Mets since they were the Dodgers, the Brooklyn Dodgers, you know? And it's such an interesting thing because there's a massive amount of baseball fans here and it's rare to find a Mets fan. And it's almost like a feeling familial aspect because the number of people I had shout something positive about the Mets to me when I was in New York wearing like a Mets cap or... You know, like I had a woman hang her entire torso out of a car and scream, "Let's go Mets," as loud as she could because she saw me wearing a hat.
And this is in June of 2019. Yeah. This isn't recently. This is in the midst of some controversy. The Mets were, you came on board right before the great run of late 2019 when they were like 43-19. Or I think the only team that had a better run in that kind of span was, you know, maybe the 99 Mets or the 1986 Mets.
Yeah.
So you could see even with what's been going on with some of the challenges with the franchise, there's still a great love. And like you said, you wouldn't see opposing fans get along in the UK at a soccer game. Who is your soccer team, by the way? Because I'm not a soccer fan, but I know a little bit about it. And we've had Mike Piazza, who owns a soccer team in Italy, on. Yeah. So if he ever wants to listen to this again, maybe he'll get a smile on his face. I don't know if Mike has time to listen to any podcasts, but who's your soccer team?
Ooh, I personally don't have one. I believe the political answer would be Falkirk because I live there. But my dad's team is Rangers. My dad and my mum's team, they're both Rangers fans. So the Glasgow Rangers, you know, that's their version of the Yankees is Celtic. You know, well, right. They're probably Scotland's version of the Yankees. They've got multiple championships under their belt. 55, actually, right. Which the 55th was won this year.
So wow.
That's celebrations for that are still going on. Despite the fact it was months ago they won it.
By the way, Steven Matz, the pitcher for the Mets, hit the home run that night. I'm looking at the box score right over there. Steven Matz hit a home run that night.
I missed the Matz Familia. Home.
Yeah, Juris Familia gave up a couple of home runs and four runs in the eighth inning, and that's what did them in. I have Liam Oliver from the UK, Scotland, joining me. We try to get different fan perspective. You know, recently, and I'm trying to give the guy the proper, James Shapiro from the Shea Bridge Report did a piece, and I don't know if you saw it, Liam, about fans in the UK. Now, everyone thinks UK is London. It's not just London. It's, you know, obviously the whole area. You're in Scotland.
Yeah.
Is this, so now you're kind of like, are you the only Mets fan around? Could you talk about baseball to your peers? And I mean, is there a way for you to kind of, you know, start your own London group over there to get into this? Because as we get deeper in the season, hopefully this is a season when the Mets go deep into the postseason.
Yep.
You know, the stakes are going to be higher. You know, did you want to just go to bed and wake up and find out what happened if the Mets are in a big postseason game?
I see. If they were in a postseason game, I'd book time off work to sit and watch it. Like, I've been really enjoying these early starts because I can listen to them. You know, the Mets have a great broadcast team on both sides. And it's something that I really found out during spring training this year, where not a lot was televised. And I very closely remember there was a Cardinals broadcast for spring training. And I don't know who the Cardinals had on, but that was a painful broadcast. You know, we're so spoiled as Mets fans with the broadcasting team, like, you know, Keith, Gary and Ron, and then the radio side, it's Wayne Randazzo
and Howie Rose.
And Howie Rose. Yes, I probably get crucified for that one, but
no, that's okay. Hey, you're only around, listen, you've only been around a couple of years. What you're going to get crucified for is if the Mets wind up winning and you jump in 2019, you don't have all the battle scars yet. You don't have all the battle scars.
Which, the funny thing on the topic of Steven Matz is he now pitches for the Blue Jays, obviously. And the thing about the Blue Jays is that's my granddad's team. So he's ex-Navy, and he has family in Canada, or had family in Canada. So he went to a Toronto Blue Jays game. He still has one of their retro caps with like the green bill on the inside.
Sure.
And has photos and original tickets from like the Rogers Centre, the year they won the World Series.
Wow.
The first World Series.
You have a baseball family. So even though your parents are not into baseball, it sounds like
not at all.
So but you have some connection. So you're not the first individual to fall in love with the game a little bit. It's interesting because the United Kingdom, I mean, the United States was born out of the United Kingdom. You know, we're kind of like cousins and things like that. And, you know, I never thought of American pastime. We know the NBA. I mean, I've been lucky. I grew up watching the NBA in the early 90s, Dream Team era, when it exploded across the globe. And I think a lot of people, I'm assuming out by you, are NBA fans. I don't know.
The NBA is big here.
NBA is big. They did an awesome job back in the early 90s under David Stern marketing across. Now, and this is interesting because this will probably tie into some of the frustrations there's been talk about. And what I find interesting is here, you're a new fan.
Yeah.
There's talk with media members how bad the game is. You're only seeing one version of the game from 2019 to now, which is more of the, we'll call it the launch angle era. You know, less action, high strikeouts, less contact. And, you know, I've always been of the thought process that things organically work themselves out. There's a fear that they don't. And in some sports like the NBA, like the NHL, the NFL, when defense became too prevalent, they made rules changes. I'm curious for you. I mean, this version of the game and what you're talking and with the American journalism going the route of the game is broke. I mean, how do you as an outsider in another country as a new fan see it? I mean, does the game bother you being that you don't have a point of reference really?
So with not having a point of reference, I obviously Talking Mets is the best Mets podcast I listen to. I've tried a couple. Yours is clearly the better one because of the takes you have on stuff like this. So for example, like I'm not so much on social media, just the job I want to do. But then when you look on certain things, like a lot of Mets on pages on Instagram, a lot of it, it's the same as like in politics and stuff, a lot of vocal minority. So, you know, Luis Rojas last night pulled Joe Lucchese, I believe, when he was dealing. But then, you know, like it's the same move like Kevin Cash would do. They would pull them when their confidence is high, when they've got that strength point to keep them going, you know? And then you get Trevor May that's like throwing a fantastic fastball and just screaming because he's doing well. And that is so interesting because those particular bits of emotion, like I really enjoy Marcus Stroman and what he does because he's so emotive. And the rules and people saying the game's dying and then the MLB retorts with, you know, not being able to market players when you've got players like Mike Trout, who, you know, there's a lot of posts about him, but other than that, you know, he's not being marketed everywhere. New York was lucky enough to get Francisco Lindor, who, slumping currently, I believe the streak he went on was his second shortest streak. If you listen to Chris Rose, who is a Cleveland Indians fan, he was saying on his podcast that I think it's the second longest streak Lindor went on, but the longest streak Lindor went on, he then led the Cleveland Indians to the World Series. So if Lindor is pulling that here, you know, the Mets fans will be fortunate. Then I enjoy the game for what it is currently, which is, you know, like you say, a lot of strikeouts, but then there's the home runs. Like I came in the year of Pete Alonso's rookie record, you know, beating Aaron Judge, the hated Yankees from across the town. It's a Mets player that does it. You know, it's not an Oakland A's player. It's not a, you know, a team in like a hitter-friendly ballpark. It's not someone in Fenway. It's a Mets homegrown player in City Field. And that's such an amazing thing that was marketed. I've got shirts I've ordered from America that's to do with, you know, the polar bear, and that stuff comes through here. And it is very interesting because you look at players, for example, like Trevor Plouffe. John Boy Media is another New York company. I'm not sure if you've heard of them, but
yes.
So like they're Yankees fans, which is why obviously I still have yourself, because we need that Mets perspective. And then Trevor Plouffe's talking about how the game is eventually writing itself. Like, for example, teams are now bunting and they're now hitting singles because of maybe something like the stupid second inning rule, which Manfred clearly intends for what? A suicide squeeze and then an infield double to get the other runner in. And that's
right.
Even like that rule change, even though I only became a fan in 2019, I was a bit like, ugh, no, you know, keep that until like the 10th, 11th inning, you know, give them at least another inning or so of clean baseball to see how it goes. you know, or like the DH in both leagues. I've had discussions online with why the DH in the National League is a good idea with someone who thinks they should just ban it for both leagues. You know, and baseball is such an interesting sport, to me anyway, and especially when you begin to understand the game, the marketability of players comes from itself. Like, you look at players like Otani and Fernando Tatis Jr., who basically get posts about them every day, but I think that's maybe, you know, their attempt at marketing it.
Right. Do you watch the Mets on MLB TV? How do you consume the game? Is it on a radio app? I'm curious because one of the things that goes on in this area is that you're kind of stuck with your team. You can't get MLB TV, but they black out certain teams that are in certain areas and whatnot. They force into the situation.
Yeah.
You can't watch any game what you want. They want you to watch the local market. And I think that's frustrated fans because the NFL doesn't do that. The NBA doesn't do that. Do you get blacked out at any point? Do they force certain teams on you? How does the MLB TV, how do you consume the Mets? I'm curious.
Yeah. So I pay for an MLB TV radio subscription. So like you know, I can listen to Howie Rose and Wayne Randazzo, and that's what my sort of day-to-day consumption is. I've got the MLB app. I get like your notifications, which 9 times out of 10 I'm waking up to. Unless it's like I believe you call it a business person special.
Yeah, there you go. You heard the business. So they call it and that's probably an antiquated term. I don't even know what they call it.
Yeah, that's all from you.
But back when I was a kid, they used to call them business person specials because you'd sneak away from the office, watch a game early, and you'd be able to get back to the office before it closed. Now, 5 o'clock quitting time, if a game starts at 1 back in 1990, you're probably back to the office 4 o'clock, you know, get a sneak an hour. And now, you know, it's not the same, you know.
As a
young intern, had the privilege of having a business place near Shea Stadium. So we could sneak out, watch the game, then still go to work and get some time in. So, you know, those days might be over. But yes, the noon games you can watch. You know, you talk about listening on the radio. That's how I didn't have cable as a kid. I didn't have cable until I was 15 years old. So I was only able to watch the Mets on free TV, which then you could get about 80 to 100 games on free TV thereabouts. Mm-hmm. Now you're not going to get anything but more maybe once a week, if that.
Yeah. So YouTube,
how is it? How is it listening on the radio? Can you grasp the game as a new fan? Is there a certain difference for you? Because I felt growing up listening on the radio, I missed out on some nuance, I think, that I would have made me a more educated, better fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, some of my best memories is listening to the team on the radio and the drama that the radio brings when it comes to big plays and big hits and whatnot.
So a good way with that is, I'll go quickly back to you saying about being blacked out. I've never been blacked out. I could probably watch whatever team I wanted. So, for example, Mother's Day, when everyone was wearing those amazing pink sort of touches to the uniform. I love those hats, but we can't get them over here. That makes me sad. But MLB did every game free, but I could go to like an Orioles game or, you know, I could watch any of those. Like, we are not blacked out, but the consumption of it's very expensive over here to get a TV subscription only to watch on my phone. We have a company, you guys would say a cable company, called Sky over here, and they do Sky Sports. Now, mainly their Sky Sports is like, it's you would say soccer, so like your football, your F1, cricket, and baseball's like shoved down at the very bottom. And even then, it's not like an official Mets channel. It's just, I think it's like Sky Sports Main Event and it's whatever games are on. If I got that, I couldn't like go, right, perfect. I can sit down and watch the Mets game, you know. But we're not blacked out. And then YouTube also has a free game of the day, which I always enjoy when that's a Mets game. But with the radio, that's now obviously my way to consume it. So I do, like you say, feel like you miss out a little bit with the TV. Like a lot of the banter between Gary, Keith and Ron, I miss out on and only hear about it on like podcasts after. Because, you know, Keith Hernandez is very known for his antics, especially with his cat and along those lines, you know. And I miss that. However, I have a very clear memory. Where I live, it's like central Scotland. So I was driving up to see my partner that I now live with. She lived up in a place called Dundee for university. So I remember driving up. It must have been when I'd finished a back shift. So it was like 10, 11 o'clock at night for opening day you know, two in 2020. And it was when everything was going scoreless and Jacob deGrom was dealing. And was it Max Fried? No. Ian Anderson, they were against?
Might be one of those, yeah. It was the game, I think, Cespedes hit the home run.
Yes.
And the Mets won 1-0 on opening day. And Diaz
and
made
the
save, right?
I remember the radio call for that so clearly about Cespedes hitting that home run. And I took my hands off the wheel and as loud as I could, pumped my fist and screamed, let's
there you
go.
You're
as
official.
Loud as
look
I could.
At that.
Yeah.
We could all relate to being places, doing things. Look at that. While you're driving, of course, still being safe, driving.
Yes,
the one
yes.
thing I have to tell you, Liam, I can't get over the steering wheel being on the right side of the car and driving. I'm afraid to drive. If I ever go to Europe and I'm afraid to rent the car and drive because I'm going to be on the wrong side of the road. I'm going to wind up being roadkill over there, you know? So
Yeah. I'm the same.
That's funny. That's funny. And you come to the United States, it's the opposite. I have Liam Oliver, big fan of the podcast over in the UK, Scotland. We're listening to his experience recently becoming a Mets fan, listening to the game from a different lens. What would you tell American baseball media and maybe even the commissioner? How can they get more guys like you, more fans like you, men, women, whatever, all different ages, to embrace? I mean, obviously the Yankees are an easy one because of the brand and the Dodgers, but it's got to be more than that. I think you have to have a connection in baseball to a team. I don't think it's going to ever be like the NBA where you're a Michael Jordan fan or a LeBron fan. I think it's a different sport in the NBA. How do you see them doing a better job with, let's talk specifically in Scotland and the UK, and can they, or are they wasting their time?
Well, I didn't know you were going to prepare this question. I would have prepared something, but
this is just extemporaneous. Give it to your gut. Give me you're a fan. You've been hooked. You got kind of lucky that you're a Mets fan, right?
Yeah, but, of course, especially with Steve Cohen coming over and the potential that they've now got. You know, they've got the best pitcher in baseball. You know, I know Gerrit Cole's good, but he's still not Jacob deGrom, you know? I think MLB are already doing the London series. So they did it in 2019, and it was the Cubs. No, it was Yankees and Red Sox.
And the Red Sox. And what was funny, Liam, not to interrupt you, the ball was flying out of that place. I remember the scores being wild. Is that because of the stadium, the environment? I'm curious if you have any thoughts, because I remember watching those games, like, what the heck is going on? It was like a softball game.
I think it was in Wimbledon, so it would have been in London. I think it's a converted rugby stadium. So that might have been why, you know, if they converted Wimbledon for that. The weather, it would have, by the time of year it would have been, especially with London, it would have been like warmer weather. So that might have contributed to it. And obviously the ball was different in 2019 as well. It might just been the air. It might just be the lack of humidity. I know, you know, summer in New York, I was melting in the seats at City Field. But it might just be the lack of humidity, you know, like the Coors effect, like they've got the dehumidifier in there and the different air might have affected it. But I think I understand the difference between the NFL, who sends their two worst teams over to play in London. You know, the first London series that Britain got was, well, England got, not so much Scotland, was Red Sox, Yankees. The historic rivalry, you know, everyone knows the pinstripes. That's why they played in them, despite the fact they were technically road games for the Yankees. And then next year was supposed to be Cardinals-Cubs, which is another rivalry. I think, you know, one in London, like a London series, and whilst they're in the UK, up to Scotland. We've got stadiums that could do them. You know, there's Murrayfield, there's stadiums that could be converted. And I think, you know, I believe every part of the UK would have a stadium that would accommodate it. So why not two games every stadium if you want to bring that in? You know, if tickets are roughly the same price, so, you know, like £35 or so, which is about $40-something, if that was for like a single ticket and you get the full atmosphere, you know, you bring everything over, you basically pick up City Field, bring the entire atmosphere and the effort over, like the vendors walking up and down, like the knowledge of baseball in the UK is such a, it's like a cartoon thing, like what you see in The Simpsons or, you know, what you see from TV shows where it's the vendors walking around throwing peanuts, and it's almost like the antiquated game,
you know,
as opposed to what it is now, which, you know, some people may not like what the game is now, but, you know, it's never really seen as an alternative to sports here. You know, your right. sports here, you're a football fan, you're a rugby fan, and if you're an older gentleman, usually golf. And if you're English or so, cricket. Mm-hmm. So baseball is never seen as an option for sports because it's so hidden away. And I think if there was the opportunity to do, you can get specific NBA team channels here. I think if there was the opportunity to get like a Mets channel on your TV or an Angels channel on your TV, right. it would be good. And the... Yep. I hope that doesn't pick up. That's an ice cream man.
That's fine. It's all organic, man. We love the ice cream man. It's that time of the year. Anyone yeah. who listens to the ice cream man in the back, they think of themselves in the summer. Mm-hmm. The ice cream guy truck coming down, get yourself yeah. a milkshake or a cone. I personally like milkshakes. I like vanilla milkshakes and I like, cones. I like, yeah. you know, not the sugar cone, I like the actual waffle. I like the yeah. waffle cone. That's yeah. my thing.
Yeah.
So.
Here it's your waffle cone with your sort of whippy ice cream with a flake in it, and that's a 99. Despite the fact it's no longer 99p and it hasn't been for a number of years.
There you go. But so you really seem to feel that they could just do a better job making the game available despite the yeah. time differences mm-hmm. and what have you. And I know that everyone wants to expand and grow into China. That's what, you know, the NBA yeah. did. I think Europe, especially Western Europe, mm-hmm. does get overlooked. You've got, you know, UK, France, Germany, yeah. Italy. Obviously, we have Piazza on the show, and I know he's going to, yes. whenever the World Baseball Classic comes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the UK has a World Baseball Classic team, but I'm curious, do you like the World Baseball Classic? Is that something that will help, in your opinion, help grow the sport in specifically Western Europe?
So when was the last World Baseball Classic?
Oh, we're probably going back 2018, and they were supposed to have one last year and right. it got canceled. Now you're looking at, I guess, next year, maybe?
Yeah.
I
just missed that. But, like, you know, there is a Scottish Baseball League. It's not the similar level of, like, the KBO or the Nippon Professional League, which all interest me as well because it's baseball. It's a different brand, but it's still baseball, you know? And I think the UK has, it's not a Scottish or an English or an Irish team. I think it's an overall United Kingdom team that we have for the World Baseball Classic.
Right.
There's plenty of YouTube videos about why we're so bad. but, you know, it's kind of difficult to compare yourself against, you know, the people that go to the World Baseball Classic and represent the Dominican or America or Korea when right. your practice fields look like a sandlot, if not like poorly maintained.
Sure. Yeah.
And I would be interested in the World Baseball Classic. It'd be something great to go to, you know, similar to an All-Star game. It's people representing their country. It would probably have a similar vibe to the Olympics, I'd hope.
Yeah. No, hosted. I mean, it depends. And I think in the United States, it's looked at as a nuisance because you're afraid your players are going to hurt. I think if you go to, you know, with the Japanese players,
yep.
the, you know, Dominican Republic, you know, mm-hmm. you know, Cuba, potentially, I don't know what the rules are going to be, obviously with COVID and with different infection rates, you know, hopefully we're in the back half here of all this, but it will be interesting. Liam, what mm-hmm. do you think, as we wrap up here, what do you think of this current Mets team? Do you, you know, the theme here coming in was, you know, I always use the old term Thunderbolts. The Mets have had their, not just one Thunderbolt, they've had been hit with a ton, and Kevin Pillar and what happened the other day is kind of a symbolic situation to this team, getting hit right in the face in a horrible way and getting themselves up and not necessarily being perfect and not necessarily being built to win over the long haul. But I feel that this is a situation where they really could learn and take some toughness away from this stretch that's going to stay with them the rest of the year. What is your feeling of this team, and do you feel good about it? Or you enjoy watching the makeshift Mets, the replacement Mets, whatever it is? And how do you feel? How do you feel about this team right now?
So I think Kevin Pillar is a great example of that. You know, he gets hit in the face, and then the next game he's out giving out the lineup cards. You know, he is Superman. He's a man of steel, taking that to the face and doing what he does, you know. But he's a veteran, isn't he? He's been through a lot, and the same thing will happen with this Mets team. They'll go through a lot. They just brought in Francisco Lindor. We've not even seen Carlos Carrasco yet. You know, there's elements of this team that are together from the 2019 run. But, I mean, how many starting pitchers are left from the 2019 run. I'm pretty sure it's just Jacob DeGrom now. Just
right, like now, well, you got Stroman a little bit. You have Stroman. Yeah. Wheeler's gone. Wheeler's gone. Syndergaard should be back. Vargas is gone. So yeah, you're looking at a situation where there's, you know, around the same time in 2019, right before you came on board as a fan, they had Conforto down, they had Cano down, they had McNeil down, and you had guys like Carlos Gomez and Dainey Echeverria and Rajay Davis, and you know, I could go on and on. Aaron Altair on that thing. So there are components here of the whole situation, and I guess that really, to me, it's going to be interesting. You know, they're playing in about, you know, 20 minutes or so. They come away from the road trip. Even if they come away from the road trip 3-6, I think this had disaster written all over. This could have been a winless road trip. You know, 4-5, I think, you know, after the injuries you'd signed for, you would have liked 5-4. And very easily without the walk-offs. Now, there are a couple of walk-offs and big hits away from, you know, maybe winning 6 or 7 games on the trip.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting how, you know, the season develops, and we're kind of at a point where we may look back at this being the jumping off point.
Yeah.
Hopefully for better days ahead.
Yeah. Like especially the catalyst, like, you know, like you get the players who are injured, but are key components, like your Jacob DeGrom. And then the influx of, you know, Francisco Lindor, who the shortstop is the captain of the infield. People are saying it's his Mets, and then there was talk about Pete Alonso being the next Mets captain during his rookie season. I mean, you know, that's, you need to slow your roll a bit with that one, but
sure,
you know, Jacob DeGrom can't well be it because he's a pitcher. He only is there only pitches every 1 to 5 days. And then people are like, oh, it's Francisco Lindor's Mets now. There's still people like your Conforto and your McNeil and your Alonso that were there, and you know, that have came up, that are all bonding together. Like the raccoon incident, that's now a point of reference for the Mets that, you know, if it was any other team, wouldn't have went as far as it would. But with it being the Mets, of course, is like you always say, you know, the media loves to get their raccoon paws on a story.
Get their pound of flesh. It's always good. You know, don't remember, somebody told me a long time, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. Now, I don't like that, but you know, I like there to be some smoke where there's, if there's a fire, I like the smoke to be somewhat near the fire on the whole thing. Who's your favorite Met, Liam? Who do you like?
I do have to say Pete Alonso. I've got an Alonso jersey.
Like the polar bear.
Yeah, I like the polar bear and Jacob DeGrom, obviously. I have a little pot of vinyls of both of them, you know, and it was Pete Alonso's rookie season that really brought me in. It was that historic moment, him shedding the tears after he beats the record, like, being there and just almost being a real person. Like, baseball players, from like an average person's perspective, they're, you know, over 6 foot. They're pretty much, they look superhuman, you know. Jacob DeGrom throwing 102 miles an hour at late 30s, you know. And then there's these young guys that are my age or younger that are doing what they're doing. And then you see the humanizing moments in that of, you know, it's just a man or a boy with a dream, and they're achieving those dreams, you know.
Do you want to embrace yourself? You know, obviously, as a new fan, you know a little bit about Mets history, but diving into that, have you thought about going back, watching old games, and really starting to, you know, go back? You know, I mean, look, you got 50 years plus, you can't catch up on that overnight, but we take for granted, you know, when I hear the broadcast bringing a Mike Pelfrey to talk, or, you know, a Benny, you see there's a great, you know, Mets Rewind, a great podcast with John Struble, a friend of mine that's had, you know, guys like Butch Husky and Bob Apodaca and Sean Estes, you know, maybe not Mets that are of, you know, the historic route, but you know, could talk about eras. Have you embraced or started to look back, see what else you could glean from Mets history to make yourself even more connected to this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, I didn't know Mike Piazza originally played for the A's at the end of his career. I thought he retired a Met, you know. Right. It's things like that. But, for example, the books you bring in. I have the book of Doc, Donnie the Kid, and Billy Brawl, how the 1985 Mets and Yankees fought for New York's baseball soul because of your podcast. I've got the other ones on a reading list, you know. Like, the Mets history is so fascinating. And I'm so happy to be a part of the group of Mets fans, you know, people like yourself that are always there and always giving those information, like your interviews with former players, for example, your interviews with Mike Piazza, or like learning even just the history of baseball, like people like Roberto Clemente or Jackie Robinson, or players that maybe not are not necessarily from the Mets, but also tie into the Mets in some way, shape, or form, you know? Like, you get players like Todd Frazier saying he wears 21 for Roberto Clemente, and that's a Mets connection to that. And then even behind you, you've got the retired numbers. You know, number 48 will be up there someday, but, like, they're retiring Jerry Kuzman's number next, 36?
Yeah, it looks like Jerry Kuzman's number is going to be retired next, and I kind of have an idea of a former Met that's going to be in the Mets Hall of Fame. I don't want to tease it yet because I don't know if it's public knowledge, but a member of the Mets who played for them sometime from 1990 onward will be inducted to the Mets Hall of Fame this summer. You guys could probably go figure out if you go look it out who it might be. It's somebody who was very popular.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. So I have that. I don't know if I could tease it yet. One day I will. I'll probably do it after it's been released and I'll be like, oh, I knew that, but
yeah,
respect to the organization. So Liam, it's almost game time. I'm going to let you run. You've been a gentleman here. This is great stuff. Here's what you need to do. You got to build the Mets brand. You're the guy in Scotland now. You're the local Met, you know, fan club. What do they call them in soccer or football? They have like the local fan club that's going to build the football club. You're Mets BC baseball club. Mets BC, I'll call you.
Yeah.
Baseball club. And we'll do that. And I will say this on the way out, you know, watching, you know, a little bit of the Chelsea game this morning, the fans are just wildly into it. I mean, I know it's not full capacity, but there was a lot of fans there. And they were, I mean, they chant and they get into it. And it's an interesting culture. We don't see that. Maybe we see that in the postseason with a little bit with the seven line, but it's interesting. We can learn a little bit from how you guys, not beating up the opposition. We'll leave that one out.
Yeah, you know,
but no offense, but you know, the passion is certainly there, and having you on board and listening to your story, especially because you're new and from a different culture that baseball is not primary. Beautiful stuff. And thank you so much for coming on today, buddy. And I'm glad you're part of the community. And it's stories like yours that make me appreciate doing this on the days when you get so much negative feedback. You're like, why do I do this? Knowing that, you know, you could take something enjoyable away from just, you know, 60 minutes or so, it means a lot. So thanks again, buddy.
No worries, Mike. Enjoy the game today.
Yeah. And we'll talk again. Okay.
Yeah. No worries, Mike. And remember, baseball needs more chance. I'll start them when I'm next over. Okay?
You start them. Let me know. All right, Liam. Be well, buddy.
Thank you. Take care.
That's Liam Oliver from the UK, from Scotland. Interesting stuff. Hope you enjoyed it. Something a little bit different, a different perspective on a Mets fan. Hope to bring more of these to you throughout the season. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at mikesilva@talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, talkingmetspodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. It was interesting as I'm listening to Liam speak about watching baseball in Scotland, United Kingdom. And not that it was difficult, but he's listening to more games on the radio, which is kind of the way that I, as a young baseball fans, started watching baseball, listening to baseball, because cable, and I've said this a few times on the show, it's probably crazy to think about now, cable wasn't wired up everywhere. I lived in a neighborhood until I was about 16 where we weren't wired for cable. We had no access to it. And, you know, basically you had to, you know, listen to the Knicks, you know, listen to the Knicks on the radio, listen to the Mets on the radio, and you got some free TV in terms of games. And then baseball was on more free TV than today you get one a week, maybe. That's it. Tops. But we talk, and I love to read the media. Well, you got to promote Mike Trout. You got to promote Shohei Ohtani. And I think it's so hard to replicate what the NBA did with the Dream Team back in the 90s and with that sport, a sport I also love. It's totally different. Individuals can take over games. There's so many narratives and stories that were built over the years in the NBA just by the nature of the sport. It's a 5-on-5 game that could become a 1-on-1 game that can completely change because of one player. Very rarely does a baseball team get changed by one player. It gets changed by a group, and the group becomes that one player. The group becomes an identity. And I think we're trying to see with the Mets right now, the 2021 Mets, how does that group blend together and become an identity, whether it's Jonishui Fargus in center field or Kevin Pillar. At the end, the Mets as a group will be the identity. And that's a lot harder to market. But availability of the games and getting people to love the game, you didn't hear him talk about some of the things that Joel Sherman's talking about, where he compared the 2021 Major League Baseball as a whole to Dave Kingman. Not wrong. I mentioned some things that they can do to improve the offense, maybe cracking down on the sticky stuff on the mound and things like that, changing the strike zone a little bit to be lower, give the hitters a better shot since they can't really hit the high pitch, you know, train them a little bit to not swing at the high pitch. Whatever those, you know, they were reasonable thoughts. And baseball is the one sport that hasn't really gone over a makeover. I mean, they did in 1968 with the mound, but the NFL, the NBA, I've said this before, the NHL with the neutral zone trap, NBA with hand checking, they all had to change the rules because the league, you know, the coaches and the league caught up on offense, and then it was a chess match. And now, I have to say, as a fan of basketball in the 90s, and I'll never complain about that style of basketball, if you have a good balance like you have now with good teams playing a good combo of offense and defense, it is a better game. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a better game. But I had a ton of fun watching 73-71 Miami Knicks games in the playoffs. The point is, it was fun because the team was good, the team had character identity, and it was about winning. And I think you could sell this sport, but you got to make it available. And it's still the only sport, unlike the NBA, unlike the NHL, that I think there's an availability problem. We've talked about this on the show, and it's certainly here in the United States, but if you're going to get anybody across the pond, anywhere, to get involved in this sport, if you're waiting to use the NBA blueprint in a time where there was less distraction, pre-social media where it exploded, good luck trying to get people's attention now with social media, with all the nonsense that's going on. You're going to have to make the game available. And you're going to have to figure out, you know, does Liam Oliver and his group of friends over in Scotland kind of build their little community and become kind of Mets Europe over there? I don't know. And if the Talking Mets, if he does do that, you know, more power to Liam, more power to those guys, and the Talking Mets podcast was part of it, that makes me happy. That makes this all the worth it. But how is he supposed to do that? How is he supposed to get his buddies all into this and involved? And I understand that series that we saw the Yankees go to London to play the Red Sox, you could do more of that when COVID becomes less of a thing across the globe, which we're probably a little bit of ways away from it across the globe, a little bit more positive here in the United States. But those will help. But I think ultimately you can't put a team in London. I mean, I guess you could, but there's always been talk about international, you know, components to every league. It's not realistic with travel. Make it available. Make communities embrace. Can't just be about the Yankee cap or the Dodger cap. Can't just be about one person. Fans have to start to enjoy the sport, and then you have to start to have them create these communities. Michael Jordan was that guy as Bulls fans popped off across the country and the globe because they were Michael Jordan fans. A lot harder to do that in baseball. Can they embrace organizations and their culture and who they are? It's like chess versus checkers. It's like old school board games versus PS3s or whatever they are. I don't play video games, so forgive me if I sound ignorant. So this is hard, but I think it starts with availability. And if you have certain key communities that are into this sport, make it available to them. Look at what you can do where you're getting some kind of distribution to make it bigger. You're never going to be like soccer in this area. Forget about it. But you build it organically. And the first way is through availability and making it affordable for them. Invest. I remember reading something like David Stern used to send VHS tapes to, I think, China. He didn't care what he made on it. He didn't care. He just wanted people to have a game in their hand. It's like the old, this is how my show became a big deal. I used to just throw links out there, message boards, created a website. I've done all sorts of things. And finally, you know, I got lucky in some ways as I developed over the years, over the 15 years. And this Talking Mets thing was born in 2016. And voila, you're here, a very humbly solid audience. You know, I'm nowhere near SNY, but don't be surprised, we're not that far off. I mean, look at this gentleman from the UK found Talking Mets before anybody else. I didn't pay for him to be on the show. I didn't pay for him to become a fan of the show. He found it and he got hooked, and that says a lot. So interesting stuff from Leanne Oliver. Obviously, the big theme is, can the Mets beat Kevin Pillar tough? Can they continue to fight and claw and do the little things and win the 4-3 games? Can the bullpen continue to be put in the position without burning itself out to do its part to keep this team afloat? The pitching is going to need to keep this team afloat as this 4A lineup tries to scratch 3-4 runs across. And help is on the way. I don't think any of these injuries are debilitating. Even Nimmo, who I was worried about, and it turns out there was a nerve issue. It was a little bit more serious than we thought. It wasn't just a bruised finger. Seems to be getting healthier. And if they could hang in there, and the Mets are taking, I believe, a little bit of a conservative approach with some of these injuries, but if they could take it, hang in there, do the right thing, I think they'll be better poised to win the war as we get into the dog days of summer, into the nitty-gritty. But over the next 6 weeks, as we go into 7 weeks or so, into the All-Star break, it's critical for this team not to let up, no matter who's on that lineup, because you could get buried pretty quick. And there's not going to be a lot of chances to take a blow. The pitching is going to be on fumes. And between now and the All-Star break, we're going to learn a lot about this team. Not only going to learn about this team, we're going to get into the phase of what do they need to really get where they want to be. And it actually might be a bat. I know Thomas Nito's hitting better, and it's some things going on behind the plate that make you wonder whether the Mets need to maybe switch who's the starter and who's the backup. You hope that when the guys come back, Conforto, McNeil, Alonso, they'll start to, get back into that groove. You know, you can't wait for J.D. Davis's bat to be back in the lineup. You know, although his defense, now that we've seen some good defense, can he be part of that solution with positioning and everything that goes on out there? We'll see. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed this show. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to a new Mets fan, a new perspective. And we're going to sit back and we're going to continue to see the makeshift Mets, the replacement Mets fight against Colorado at Citi Field, Atlanta, a much more busy Citi Field, fans coming back. We're putting a lot of 2020 in the rearview mirror. Thankfully, looks like we're getting to the point where life is starting to get back to normal little by little by little. And I think we're going to have as normal of ballparks as you can get as we get into the summer months. And that's a cool thing. And it's certainly going to be a big advantage for the Mets at Citi Field as they've played well there so far this year with less fans. I can only imagine more fans could potentially be a positive. Could be a negative. Could put more pressure on them. The Boo Birds will be out. But I think the fans are liking that these guys, these 4A guys, are doing the best they can to keep this line moving till the Calvary comes over the hill, which I don't think is that far away. I want to thank Liam Oliver for joining me today. Of course, I want to thank all of you for tuning into the broadcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be with another podcast pretty soon. Till then, take care, everybody.